You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses.
Season 19, Episode 12. This is Writing Excuses.
A close reading on voice, Red's perspective, muscular prose.
15 minutes long.
Because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dong Wan.
I'm Aaron.
I'm Howard.
We're going to be talking about muscular prose, which is one of my favorite things. One of the things that I want us to start with is actually listening to the first three paragraphs of Time War. And the reason we're going to dive into this is that they are doing so much heavy lifting in communicating both character and world through the language and choices that they're making here. So, when Red wins, she stands alone. Blood slicks her hair. She breathes out steam in the last night of this dying world. That was fun, she thinks, but the thought sours in the framing. It was clean, at least. Climb up time's threads into the past and make sure no one survives this battle to muddle the futures her agency's arranged. The futures in which her agency rules, in which Red herself is possible. She's come to knot this strand of history and sear it until it melts. So here are the things that that is happening here. First of all, we have this sense of the character. When Red wins, she stands alone. This is someone who is a singular entity. We know that this is someone who enjoys carnage. Blood slicks her hair. That was fun. These are things that are conveyed in the text very quickly, very efficiently. And then this thing about muddle the futures her agencies arrange, the futures in which her agency rules, in which Red herself is possible, this begins to tell you, oh, here we have the time war that we're talking about. And then we have the goal. You know, that she is, among other things, trying to ensure her own existence. And all of this is being conveyed in a very compressed, very tight way, but also has this these rhythms to it.
Mm-hmm.
The repetition, the intentional repetition of to muddle the futures her agency's arranged, the futures in which her agency rules. That repetition is one of the most powerful tools you can use to draw the reader's attention to a thing.
One of the things I love, and you mentioned this very briefly, but the way rhythm is used in this, right? Because you have this thing that starts with, when Red wins, she stands alone, right? And so you have this very brief sentence, and then you get to, she breathes out steam in the last night of this dying world, which is, you can almost feel the exhalation in that breath, because the way you would read that out is in a long exhalation. And you have these very sensory, relatively brief things that are very rooted in the body. And then it gets to what you were talking about in terms of describing the time war, this climb up time's threads, and it kind of goes on and rambling, and it reverses on itself, it repeats itself. And you almost feel the thing that Red loves, which is battle and doing these things and feeling the blood in her hair, is disrupted by the mess of the time war, right? This complicated braided thread that she has to deal with over and over again that gets in the way of what she's trying to do, which is enjoy life, right? And I love the tension that is already being communicated through voice tools at the core of this character, and is the thing that's going to drive her through so much of this book, of her desire to do a good job and to accomplish mission versus her frustration with the agency and its overall plan for her.
Mm-hmm. And you can hear that in that second thing about, that was fun, she thinks, but the thought sours in the framing. This is something that she has enjoyed in the past. There's a thought that I've had multiple times. That was fun, but something has, she's losing interest and excitement in it.
Yeah, I feel that tension a lot in the, there's a lot of violent verbs. Like there are a lot of like very strong, very active verbs throughout this that are, you know, you're nodding and searing, and there's a, you know, everything feels very active. But even in that sentence, she's come to knot this strand of history and sear it until it melts. Those are very strong verbs, but she's come to sets it back.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like she knots. Like there is a little bit of a, okay, there's a little bit of distance in the sentence itself, in the voice itself, where it is, I am doing these acts of violence, but I am also slightly observant of them, slightly looking at what I do as I do it. And that, I think, is what allows room for that tension between the enjoyment and the feeling unease about that enjoyment or about the work itself.
It's also worth pointing out that throughout the book, we will see red associated with things that are red and blue associated with things that are blue. In the first two lines, when Red wins, she stands alone. Blood slicks her hair. We have the word red and we have the word blood. And the way the text is laid out, they're actually one almost directly above the other. And that is a very subtle signaling for what is going to happen for the rest of the book.
Mm-hmm.
At the bottom of page one, after a mission comes a grand and final silence. Her weapons and armor fold into her like roses at dusk. And now we have a much more subtle, you know, the first of the I am red, therefore I do things with red things. The very first of those moments. And on a reread or a re-reread of this text, you will find this everywhere. You will find new words for red things.
It becomes an explicit game throughout the book of trying to come up with more synonyms for red and more synonyms for blue that the characters are playing. And that's where the playfulness comes in. And that's also one thing I want to point out here is that this the tone of this is so serious and so dramatic, right? We have this image of this woman, you know, whose you know, body is strange in this moment before it folds back in on itself, literally holding a corpse in one hand, you know, celebrating her victory. But there's also a playfulness to it, right? That red and blood, the searing of the strand, like all this imagery, there's a little bit of you can feel the writer saying to you a little bit, I'm having a really good time right now, and you're going to have a good time with me. We are doing it, you know? And I think that comes through in a way that is really delightful and invites the reader in immediately to, hey, play with me in this space here.
And it's also, I have to say, one of the things that I particularly love about that sentence is that it contains this very tiny hint of foreshadowing. Because Red is coming from the agency, which is all mechanical things, and ultimately is going to be seduced and seduce someone who comes from the garden. And so this first introduction of like roses at dusk, that's also this first moment where it's foreshadowing that roses and gardening things can be attractive. And that I find really, really lovely and very subtle. One of the other things that I want to pause for is to just reiterate that some of the tools that we're looking at are pacing, accent, attitude, and experience. And you can see that in all of these, that her experience is coloring the way she is looking at things. But the other thing that is happening in this is something that I call focus, which is how long you linger on something. The longer you linger on it, if you think about it as looking at something in real life, the longer you linger on it, the more important it is. And so it's one of the ways that you can focus the reader's attention on things that are important. And you choose where to put that. Frequently when you see something that's got purple prose, they're putting those emphasis points at everything instead of just at the important things. So the example that I have of this is, again, that her weapons and armor fold into her like roses at dusk. And then because weapons and armor are extremely important, we emphasize this by continuing to talk about them. Once flaps of pseudoskins settle and heal and the programmable matter of her clothing knits back together, Red looks again something like a woman. A woman, her appearance is the least important part of that. The thing that is important to Red is her armor. And so that's where all the emphasis comes. That's where the focus is. That's where all of the flourishes are in the text to focus the reader on the thing that is most important to this character.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I've never read a book where I feel so deeply attached to the characters that I have no mental image of what these two women look like. Mm-hmm. I don't know what Red looks like. I don't know what Blue looks like. I have no conception of them other than literally a red shape in my mind and a blue shape in my mind. And yet they feel like such thoroughly realized characters, right? And in part, that is part of the playfulness that they're doing here. There's a hint that Red has an actual name at some point that's mentioned explicitly, but we only know her as Red. We only know her as this abstraction. And yet, because the voice is telling us none of these other things matter. Here's what matters about Red is that she is Red and she is a woman, right? And that's the information we need to know. And then we're off to the races. Mm-hmm. And there's so much clarity to that. And the voice is part of how that's being reinforced to us over and over again.
So I think this is a great point to pause. And then when we come back, we're going to look at some other examples of the way they are manipulating voice to establish who these characters are and what the world looks like.
Hey, writers. Are you thinking about learning a new language? I think exploring the world, experiencing other cultures, and being able to communicate with people outside your everyday experience lets you create richer, better stories. A great way to do that is with Rosetta Stone, a trusted expert for over 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. They use an immersive technique which leads to fast language acquisition. It's an intuitive process that helps you really learn to speak, listen, and most of all, think in the language you're trying to learn. They also feature true accent speech recognition technology that gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's like having a voice coach in your home. Learn at home or on the go with a desktop and mobile app that let you download and access lessons even when you're offline. And it's an amazing value. A lifetime membership gives you access to all 25 languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, German, Japanese, and, of course, Korean. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Writing Excuses listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Making your mental health a priority is always a challenge. And I think it's easy to not prioritize it, especially when you're trying to figure out how to write a book. I think we have some deep cultural idea that artists should be tortured and depressed to make their best work. But in my experience, struggling to find clarity and motivation will hurt your process a lot more than help it. In my own life, therapy has been essential to figuring out how to navigate an industry seemingly designed to give all of us anxiety. Being able to talk to an expert can help you set better boundaries, find a balance between the demands of your work and your art, and navigate the complexities of being a published writer. That said, finding a therapist is never easy, especially if you're not in a major city like I am. That's where a service like BetterHelp can be of use to help you start the process while you figure out what your needs are for your mental health journey. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/WX today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/WX.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I love sandbox games, especially those that let me build things. And when I'm building, I really, really don't want to be interrupted by combat. So let me tell you about Planet Crafter from Mizu Games. It's a first-person sandbox survival game in which your objective is to build things to transform, no, to terraform, the world to which you have been banished. Your only enemy in this endeavor is you. You, and your own overestimation of how far you can go on one tank of oxygen. I put at least 40 hours into this game during early access in 2023, and am happy to recommend it to you.
So now let's look at some really specific examples.
One thing I really love about how the voice operates here is the author manages to make a clear distinction between what is narration and what is internal thoughts to the character. And that is not indicated at all in any way in the typography of the text. Usually, if you were like slipping into the character's internal perspective, you'd have italics or quotes or something like that. Instead, this is very fluid. So the example that I'm thinking of comes very early. It's in that third paragraph or fourth paragraph. She's holding the corpse, and it says, she lets go, and the exoskeleton clatters against rock. Crude technology. Ancient. Bronze to depleted uranium. He never had a chance. What I love about this is it goes from full sentences, which are the narration, into these very clipped and abrupt thoughts that most of the time don't even have verbs. You get the sense of this is Red's internal monologue of just utter contempt and dismissal of things that aren't important to her. Her thoughts are so brief and abrupt. And this is, you know, again, getting into this idea of like, what is muscular prose? We get a sense of a character who's so forceful, so, you know, abrupt and straightforward and violent, even in how she thinks, right? And we see a little bit of that again later when she's, you know, contemplating the letter. We have this moment where once she finds the letter, it says she thirsts for contact, for a new, more worthy battle, but she is alone with the corpses and the splinters and the letter her enemy left. it is a trap, of course. And it's like, the it is the trap again feels so much like Red's internal thoughts interjecting into our experience of the flow of the world.
There's another good example of this just on page 2. She paces the battlefield, seeking, making sure. She has won. Yes, she has won. She is certain she has won, hasn't she? That transition from I am watching you stalk across the battlefield in third person to I am inside your head riding this question mark with you is seamless.
And this mechanically is something called free indirect speech, popularized by Jane Austen. But it's where you take the character's thoughts and you put them directly into the narration. Mm-hmm. There's also reported thought, which we have earlier in that second paragraph, that first page with, that was fun, she thinks. That's a reported thought, mm-hmm. reported speech. And for me, the difference between when you make the decision on how to use those is that free indirect causes all of the narration to become directly linked to the character. And so the reader then is spending time with the character. But when you go to reported speech, it creates a distance between the narration and the character because there's a distinction about which one is happening. And that can sometimes cause the rest of the narration to become slightly distanced for the reader. So what I find is that if I want the reader to come in closer, that I will use free indirect speech. But if I want them to be a little bit distanced, mm-hmm. then I will often go to that reported speech. Or if I want to remove any ambiguity about the fact that this is a thought that the character has in exactly those words.
Yeah, I often, you talking about the difference between those made me think about filtering words, which are things like she thinks or mm-hmm. she saw, or if you say she saw him across the room, you're reminding me that there is a character experiencing this versus like there he was across the room. Then I'm inside the thoughts. It feels a little bit more immediate. And I think what's interesting is this is one of those times in which sometimes I've seen people say, you don't want filtering words in your prose. I hate don'ts in writing advice because really it's you want to figure out when, like you're saying, you want to create that distance. When is it important to know that someone is watching someone else? When is that part of what you're trying to be creating on the page? And when do you want to be immediate? Yeah. And that's why I love seeing it here because it really shows when those transitions are happening, yeah. what they're actually doing for you as a reader, how they're making you lean in, and when they're allowing you space to kind of lean back.
Can I ask a dumb question? Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. You said, you know, when I want them to be close, when I want them to be farther away. When do you want that?
This is a good question. I think that what you're looking for are, and again, this gets into that there's another question behind it, but things that are thematically important. Mm-hmm. So things that are thematically important where you want the reader to really be there with you, those are the ones where you're going to want them to lean in, where you want them to embody. You can think about unpacking versus compressing. The things that are not thematically important, the things you need to kind of skid past, those are the ones where you're. It's like, okay, we can give you a little bit of distance here. They walk down the hallway, and it's like we don't experience any of the walking down the hallway. We just transition there.
What I love about this case is the one time we do see that sort of reported address is it's a lie. It's explicitly a lie, right? Mm-hmm. She says, that was fun, and then the thought sours. We understand immediately that that is not a real thought that Red is having. That is a thing that is injecting that distance. So we have the perspective on her, and then that parallax lets us understand, oh, wait, Red is somebody else. Yeah. And then so when we get the direct later, or the sort of free indirect?
Free indirect.
Thank you. When we get that later, it is so much closer to who she is as a true person.
Well, and the other thing is, and this gets back to Howard's question, the other reason that the thing that's happening with that was fun, when you want to remove ambiguity or add emphasis. So at the beginning, there is ambiguity because we don't know Red yet. Mm-hmm. So if that were just blood slicks her hair, she breathes out steam in the last night of this dying world. That was fun. It was clean, at least. There's no, like, that's a very different experience. then that was fun, she thinks.
Yeah.
And again, that that adding emphasis of the there's a distance there, but it also removes the ambiguity. So I think it's doing two things at the same time. And I will also say, readers, that when you're listening to us talk about these deliberate choices, that very often if we talk to the author about it, the author will be like, oh, I did? Really? So,
yes.
So just because we're talking about this tool that you can use and look at how they did this does not necessarily mean that they were thinking about it consciously.
One of the best pieces of advice I ever got, I got indirectly from our very own Mary Robinette Kowal. When someone approaches you and says, I love the way you use, for instance, free and direct speech in order to draw me into this character during their scary walk down that hallway, and you don't remember actually writing that, you smile and nod and say, thank you so much for noticing.
I will say Max is an infuriating writer to work with because every time I do say something like that, he says, oh, good, you noticed that.
Yeah.
But I would say sometimes what you can do is look at the effect of something. So one way these tools are great is if you're like, wow, I thought I wrote this really compelling emotional moment, but when I'm giving it to beta readers or reading it back, I feel like there's this weird space between the characters. I feel like people aren't getting the emotions. Mm-hmm. They feel really removed. It's to be like, oh, well, what type of speech am I using? Maybe I am using like filtering words. Maybe I am sitting further back. And then you can look for the techniques that you may have used accidentally and say, like, do I want to shift that technique because the effect that it's having is mm-hmm. not the one that I was looking for on the
yeah.
page.
And also, like, one of the things that you can do to tie the reader closer to the emotion is to put that free indirect speech in.
Mm-hmm.
I find that there's the body language and then there's the motivation behind the body language. And so I will often put that character thought in there when the body language itself is ambiguous. It's like, oh, let me explain why this thing is happening. But by putting it in part of the narration, in the character's voice, in the character's emotion, it looks like, instead of me saying, this is why they did this thing, it's like, oh, now we are experiencing it with the character. I'm masking it in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the nice thing about writing as opposed to, say, tennis off the top of my head is that when you get it wrong, you know, when you miss the ball completely or hit the net, you get to rewrite it.
Yes.
You get to learn mm-hmm. from the mistake so that when it actually goes to the wide audience, the serves are perfect. There's no net. It's right on the mm-hmm. line. I don't play tennis. I don't know what these things are called.
One other section I want to talk about before we end this episode is there's another shift in voice in this chapter. So right towards the end, we lose Red's perspective. Red leaves the scene, and then we get a shift in the voice where it goes to Seeker. And what I love about this is it is once again indicating the playfulness that we're going to encounter over and over in the book, but also the way the authors are using voice to communicate the central plot question, right? One of the main mystery threads pulling us through the book is what the hell is Seeker? What's going on there? What keeps happening at the end of these scenes? And so we have this shift from Red's voice, which we've talked about, to this different perspective. The planet waits for its end. Vines live, yes, and crickets, though no one's left to see them but the skulls. Rain clouds threaten, lightning blooms, and the battlefield goes monochrome. Literally, we're losing color. We're losing that, like, abrupt muscular perspective and receding into something that has more distance from the scene and something that has a longer time scale and has more motion and relaxation almost in it. Like, we're letting the planet die. We're stepping back from these moments. Literally, the letters cinders die. The shadow of a broken gunship twists. It's like all of these images that are slower and calmer, but also more mysterious. And that shift in voice and tone is such a signal to the reader that something else is going on. It's the author raising a big flag and saying, hey, pay attention to this. We're doing something different for a second here. And it's a wonderful use of the way you can use voice to communicate tons of information that isn't just mood and setting, but is like, hey, this is plot. Pay attention. Mm-hmm. This is plot right here. You know.
And you'll also often hear, I'm glad you brought this up, one of the rules that you will hear people tell you is that you're not allowed to switch POV during a scene without a scene break. And that's not true. You just have to be really clear about the fact that it is happening. And one of the things that mechanically happens here is that Red leaves. And it just says Red leaves then. And we stay there. So if you think about it as a camera, the camera is still in place. One actor leaves, another enters the scene. And so you can absolutely do that. I can think of multiple examples in published fiction, not just here.
It's called third person cinematic. And it's literally because camera. You mentioned Seeker and this shift. The plot hook at the end of this chapter. Are we getting ready for homework? Can I read this last bit? Okay. The world cracks through the middle. The ash becomes a piece of paper with sapphire ink in a vinyl hand at the top. This letter was meant to be read once, then destroyed. In the moments before the world comes apart, she reads it again. I get chills every time that happens because I feel like Red introduced us to some of the rules of time travel in this opening chapter. And then at the end of the chapter, we've broken a rule, and I don't know why and I don't know how, but I want to know both. And this chapter bought for me the whole rest of the book.
Yeah. I mean, this section is not hanging a gun on the mantelpiece. It's hanging an entire cannon up there. And that is going to go off by the end of this book in a really delightful and exciting way.
It is fantastic. So I have some homework for you. I want you to take a sentence from your work in progress, and you're going to use the tools we've been talking about, pacing, accent, attitude, experience, and you're going to adjust the age of your character. I want you to adjust them to make them a child. And then I want you to do it again, same sentence. I want you to adjust it to make them from a different region. And then again, to give them a different profession. So you're changing their experience. You're changing their attitude. And I want you to change and their pacing, because the pace that you use as a child is different than you use as an adult. Those are things that I just want you to play with. If you get really excited, you can start switching things to be from the point of view of a different character in your book, but the same experience. So have fun. This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.
Hey, podcast lovers. Did you know that you can upgrade your experience here with our ad-free tier on Patreon? Head over to patreon.com/writing excuses to enjoy an ad-free oasis, as well as access to our virtual Discord community where you can talk with your fellow writers.
Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dongwon Song, Aaron Roberts, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.